Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 86 of the Knowing... Is it 86? Is it 87?
87, I believe.
It's 87, sorry, of the Knowing Wheel podcast. Yesterday we return to the end of F1 in 2022. It's all over. Abu Dhabi, as always, gave us an absolutely cracking race. So there's going to be plenty to talk about today. But of course, you will have already heard the sweet, sultry tones of Mr. 183 alongside me. How are we doing, mate?
I'm good. I actually enjoyed the race a little bit because I'm not a Lewis Hamilton fan. So I'll give the unbiased opinion of saying it was okay.
It was pretty dull. You can't argue.
It wasn't the worst of the season.
No, but that's because Mexico's still there.
Yeah, and Monaco.
But it was pretty, pretty dull, let's be fair. Because I think this was the thing, wasn't it, going into Abu Dhabi. Of course, last year, the race again was pretty dull, but we remember it for the absolute daylight robbery. So we kind of didn't know what was going to happen this weekend. Like, whether the track changes would actually work at all.
There was a lot of action, it just was all irrelevant.
Yeah, a bit like, well, a lot of Brazil last weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, of course...
Shall we get straight into it?
Well, quickly, before we get straight into this, we'll quickly just plug everything down below. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you check out Spotify. We've got links to Bybit, Manscaped, all that good stuff. Will be linked down in the description. Yeah, I just want to say, of course, a massive thank you to everyone that has tuned in on Spotify over the course of the year. I think, Jamie, let me just double check this before I say with any confidence, I think we're close to 10,000 streams across the show, which for our little old rambly F1 podcast...
That's really good.
Yeah, we're up to 9,900 streams, which is...
That's more than 100 a video, and we started off with nothing.
Wow. Exactly. We started from the bottom, now we're here.
All right, there's a lawsuit going your way.
Yeah, definitely is, yeah. And that's the end of Knowing Wheel. I mean, we had a few talking points, of course, going into the weekend, which we discussed last week. Obviously, Perez versus Leclerc was the hyped-up one. More importantly, of course, was Logan Sargeant potentially off to Williams for 2022. Then we kind of accidentally, Helmut Marko in his old age, confirmed Ricciardo and then took it back and then confirmed it again, didn't he?
Yeah. So it's looking like he'll go to Red Bull as a third driver just for vibes, really.
Pretty much.
Because they've still got Lawson as reserve. So Ricciardo won't actually have any work to do. He'll just be sort of messing around doing show days and stuff, which sounds perfect for him, really.
It does, doesn't it?
It's like backup goalkeeper and an F1 third driver.
Yeah.
Ideal jobs in the world.
But I think, Ricciardo's just banking on Perez having a stinker next year, isn't he? To try and get back into that F1 seat. Which wouldn't surprise me if Red Bull, like, if that happened, but still seems a bit unlikely, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also, like, they've got a reserve team, or like AlphaTauri exists for a reason.
Yeah.
I feel like they would not just automatically put Ricciardo in. Obviously, if Tsunoda or De Vries doesn't have a good season, then maybe they would. But if either of them shows potential, then I reckon they would just go with their juniors.
But it's like Perez got into the seat, to be fair.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's Red Bull's junior team. we've discussed this recently, haven't we, before. There's still rumblings going around that perhaps they'll get sold off to someone else. I mean, we'll wait and see about that, whether it becomes sort of a Honda Red Bull B-spec team and all this, that, and the other. We've also therefore got... It's not confirmed in any way yet, but it looks more and more likely that Mick's going to be off to Mercedes next year as a reserve driver. Which, again, seems It seems all right.
It makes
right.
a bit I mean, of sense, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Michael Schumacher was a Mercedes junior for quite a few years, of course, often forgotten about after yeah. he went to Formula One. Of course, he then raced for Mercedes as well in its current guise. But it makes sense, doesn't it? I think he's just praying that he can get into Audi when they come into yeah. Formula One.
Yeah, if he's still relevant by then. But yeah, it makes some sense. Obviously, German team, a lot of history with the family, and they've lost De Vries to AlphaTauri. So he's a very competent reserve driver, absolutely. So
shame he's yeah. just not very quick.
Yeah, yeah. But there we go. He had a bit of a shocker this weekend as well.
He did. He certainly did. We'll discuss that later on. But I mean, the other kind of strange announcement, well, I wouldn't say strange announcement, but kind of one that none of us were really expecting, is of course that Formula W Academy has been confirmed. Yeah. And I think on Twitter, everyone has misunderstood this.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
Rather weird.
Because it's basically a W Series feeder series.
Yes. But they haven't labelled it as such, but they've also said it will be.
Yeah, they haven't. So it's called, is it called Formula Academy or something?
Yes.
So there's nothing in the title related to W Series or Women's Series or anything like that.
Because Formula One don't own W Series. What people forget is W Series were paying Formula One to feature on their Grand Prix weekends in exactly the same way as Porsche Super Cup.
Yeah, so it's not an FIA feeder series. I think it probably will be eventually. But yeah, it's basically just a feeder series for the W Series, which when a lot of the W Series drivers are quite young anyway. I mean, it sort of makes sense to me. I mean, it doesn't affect the way F1 will work, but it makes sense to get the female drivers into Grand Prix cars, like single seater cars, at a younger age, so that their physicality and their everything else can just be worked up from an earlier age, which I think in the long term will probably make a difference. But it will still be, I think it won't be in the current generation of female drivers that one of them gets to F1, to be honest.
I have said on my own sort of videos before, I do believe that the next female Formula One driver, I believe, is already alive today.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But, I mean, obviously, the Academy cars, they're going to be effectively Formula 4 cars. So, interesting to see, of course, that F1 is trying to sort of bring in this ladder. Because in terms of now performance, you've got F4. W Series and Formula 3 are pretty much the same, but yeah. Formula 3 is slightly faster. F2, F1. So, I mean, it does open up more potential for female drivers, of course, to yeah. either move into W Series or Formula 3. And I think, you know, again, it's very, very difficult for us, obviously, because we're both blokes at the end of the day. Obviously, we don't see firsthand a lot of the struggles that younger female drivers can often sort of face. But, you know, giving more drivers the opportunity, of course, there's going to be five teams, isn't it, of three drivers. They're all already in, like, around Formula 1 or Junior Formula. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably Prema, Carlin, MP, ART, and Campos. They Perhaps. Still yeah. have, form- they yeah, have Formula 2 and Formula yeah. 3, don't they? So yeah. those are sort of the five teams I'd imagine it's going to be.
I mean, people love to just see news like this and just get annoyed for no reason. I just think it doesn't affect anyone negatively. It just gives more people the chance to develop their skills in a single seater.
I can understand still the discussion, isn't it, of course, of why don't they just race men?
Well, because they, like, the seats are so limited.
This is obviously the problem, isn't it? And of course, if
it's
there's,
the same all the way up.
If there's going to be, like, again, if we're talking in comparison to Formula 3 here, if there's going to be 30 men that can get more sponsors in, then they're just going to be able to buy up those seats. So it does kind of give them a bit of opportunity. Of course, it is partially funded by F1 as well. I think what we're very going to quickly see is W Series sold off to Formula 1 as well.
Yeah.
It will probably be brought under their own. But in fact, it might have already happened. We just haven't had confirmation yet. But it seems a bit strange that they'd actively make a feeder series to a championship they don't own and have got no intention of owning. But I think, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Again, none of us really kind of knew what to expect with W Series, did we? And of course, it was quite a big shame that it did get scrapped. Or, sorry, the final couple of races got scrapped.
They ran out of money
for this year. I mean, they were always going to have a tough time anyway, starting it off in COVID.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was things like, of course, why are they trying to ship them all out to Singapore and Mexico and COTA? You know, just run a Formula 3 calendar. Just keep it in Europe. Keep costs low early on. And just bring it to the races that, you know, consistently provide good Grand Prix as well. But
because, like, it isn't, like, I get why they're trying to make it a global thing, but ultimately it is effectively a feeder series.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of the pinnacle of that, like, there's nothing above it technically because it's not owned by the FIA. Like, there's no point just wasting money on trying to go around the globe.
It's a bit complicated, isn't it? Because that's kind of like saying that British touring cars is the pinnacle of UK motorsport. But if you gave 100 people the opportunity, 99 of them would rather go in Formula One than BTCC.
Yeah.
Just because it's technically the pinnacle, kind of doesn't mean there isn't room to move up.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, W Academy, it should be okay. I think it'll certainly help the young female drivers, and female sport generally is getting bigger and bigger. So I think it's a good thing that F1 are trying to push it.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's get into the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix weekend, Jamie. Of course, we spoke so much about Brazil, you know, how interesting that weekend was. To be honest, though, I mean, obviously a lot of people were trying to hype up that we might get another Mercedes win, you know, a bit more craziness. Abu Dhabi is kind of a very predictable circuit. Generally, what you find is the cars that have been quick over the course of the year are quick at Abu Dhabi. You know, it just makes quite a good testing facility because it's got a good combination of different sort of, you know, low speed, high speed, medium speed, everything like that. It's kind of a good all-rounder circuit in that sense. So I think we kind of ruled out the opportunity for any particularly crazy shenanigans unless, of course, what's his face managed to get back in.
Who's that?
I've suddenly blanked on his name. Australian. Why have I blanked on his name suddenly?
Mark Webber?
No. How have I blanked on his name? The FIA steward from last year.
Oh, Michael Massey.
Yes. I don't know. I could picture his face. I just couldn't remember his name. What?
He's New Zealandish, isn't he?
I thought he was Australian, to be honest.
He's an absolute legend. No, he's definitely not.
It's not going that far. He is Australian. Oh, I was right.
Okay. Same thing, really.
Right. You're going to get a lot of hate from our Australian viewers.
The comments.
I mean, it takes him 6 months to dial into the show anyway, but hey. I mean, neither of us really expected it to be particularly unpredictable, did we?
No, not at all. Abu Dhabi is one of those, it's sort of like an end of term vibe where everyone's sort of given up and focusing on next year,
especially
unless there's a championship to win.
Yeah.
And they were trying to hype up the battle of P2, but realistically, I mean, I think the drivers cared, and maybe that was it.
I don't even think the drivers cared, to be honest. I mean, this was kind of the weird thing, because Ferrari had, like, everyone was hyping up, like, are Ferrari going to go aggressive, you know, to beat Mercedes, things like that. Like, Ferrari just basically, in their ideal world, Leclerc would finish ahead of Perez, and that would guarantee they beat out Mercedes, pretty much. So it was kind of, if they get one, they get both. And then even if Leclerc had no chance of beating Perez, even if they just finished fifth and sixth, like, they would have done enough unless Red Bull had a nightmare.
Yeah. So
it was kind of hyped up, but everything was kind of a long shot, wasn't it?
Yeah. Even the lower down championship things were very much a long shot.
Yeah.
But straight into qualifying then. Not really any surprises in Q1. We had, I guess, Bottas being that low, but the Alfa Romeo hasn't shown great speed of late, until the last race in Brazil, actually. But yeah, Bottas was 18th. He had both Williams behind him, and Magnussen and Gasly dropping down as well. Magnussen kind of, falling from grace after that pole position in the last qualifying session, down in 16th. But yeah, no massive surprises in Q1 or Q2, really. I guess he had the traditional top nine, minus Alonso, actually, who went out in 11th. But with Ricciardo's three-place penalty, he was guaranteed 10th anyway.
Apparently, Alonso hasn't made it into Q3 in Abu Dhabi since, like, 2014 or something mad.
That's insane. I guess he hasn't really had the car to until this year.
Last year.
Had Alonso, Tsunoda, Schumacher actually doing respectably in 13th, with Stroll and Joe out in P15. The amount of times this season that Joe's got through to Q2 and then just not got a lap together in Q2 and started 15th, it feels like it's every week. But maybe that's just me just focusing on what he's doing every week. I qualified Bottas, so well done.
Hats off to him, fair play.
Indeed.
And talk me through Q3, Mr. 183.
Oh, Q3, indeed. Not not that surprising again, really. It was a fairly dead qualifying session.
It really was, wasn't it?
You had maybe the Mercedes, like how they were. I think Hamilton was purple in sector one on one of his laps. Maybe when he was first out the garage, I don't actually know. But yeah, Verstappen, as we all kind of expected, securing the pole position, and he made up with Perez enough to give him tow as well on both runs. So the second run, Perez did put it P2 just ahead, a few hundredths ahead of Leclerc. So that tow from Verstappen definitely made a difference. So yeah, Leclerc was third. Then you had Sainz and Hamilton and Russell, very Noah's Ark top six, as we've seen many times this season.
No, the first time this year.
Really?
Yep, first time this year the top six have lined up 2 by 2 by 2.
Really? That's impressive. I didn't know that.
First Norris, Red Bull front row lockout since 2018, which I thought was mad.
Mexico 2018.
Yeah.
Wow. That is quite crazy. Perez is pretty bad, isn't he? Norris P7, traditionally, as he's been all season.
Pretty much.
And Ocon, Vettel and Ricciardo, but obviously the free place pen dropped him to 13th, so it's actually Alonso 10th on the grid.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be fair, I mean, all the hype was around Sebastian Vettel this weekend, and absolutely right, but it is quite funny, of course, the fact that we hyped up Sebastian Vettel's last Grand Prix, or Formula One did anyway, when you've got three other drivers that could potentially come back to F1. But I think if we were held at gunpoint right now, Seb is probably second or the most likely to make a Formula One return anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So who else is out? Latifi, Schumacher,
Ricciardo.
Yeah, I would say Vettel's the most likely.
Vettel is still
back.
The most likely one to make a Formula One return, which is kind of insane when you think about it at the end of the year. But, I mean, it was great, wasn't it? Sort of seeing all this tribute stuff for Seb, obviously, in qualifying after the... before the Grand Prix as well, of course, after the GP. I mean, I found it hilarious. I don't know if you saw this, but the FIA actually designated a place on the start-finish straight for burnouts after the Grand Prix and donuts.
Really?
It's the first time they've ever done it, like, formally. Which kind of is mad, the fact they felt the need to do that, but
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
I guess, but, like, they don't like donuts, or like the safety in them doesn't like them to do donuts, but then they've just kind of given up, so they're gonna do it anyway. They've tried for 10 years to tell them not to do donuts.
I mean, you can't really stop them, can you? Let's be fair.
No. Like, although, did you see Mick Schumacher was doing donuts, celebrating his P16.
Yep.
And the team told him off and said, please, like, seriously, don't do donuts.
And I don't get that. Like, clearly, there's got to be a lot there's of deep-rooted issues between between Mick and Haas there.
Haas, yeah.
Like, it's his final Grand Prix. But then again, they told Grosjean the same thing a few years ago, so perhaps Haas are just trying to recycle
With Grosjean, it was a bit lighthearted, wasn't it? It was like,
a little bit
Pitbull
more
says,
high, but
Pitbull says, don't do donuts. And he's like, well, what do you say? And he's like, I'm just telling you what the Pitbull says.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed very, very strange, didn't it, post Grand Prix, that they were like, Mick, stop doing that. And he's kind of there, like, I don't really care. Which you can't blame him, to be honest. But, I mean, of course, before we get into the Grand Prix, though, Logan Sargeant did do enough. He will be in Formula One next year, which means all 20 drivers are confirmed. Any slim chance Mick Schumacher had of potentially going down to Williams have been well and truly eroded. Quick shout out as well, Liam Lawson winning the final sprint race of the year. Was it the final sprint or was it the final feature race? Iwasa won the feature, didn't he? Yeah. So, yeah, Lawson did go gala in the end there, finishes P3 in Formula 2 behind Teo Porcher.
Should get a shot.
And Felipe Drugovich. Should have got a shot at AlphaTauri after last year, where he did well in F2 and DTM, but it is what it is.
I don't know if he had super license last year, but this year he definitely would.
Yeah, yeah. Should have got super license. Where did he finish last year in F2?
He was like 9th in F2 last year.
I reckon he would have probably storming close to super. I mean, there's drivers in F3 with eligibility for a super license.
Yeah,
surely
true.
Lawson is. But yeah, obviously then we move into Sunday. Of course, even more celebrations for Sebastian, everything like that. But of course, we're mainly focused on the Grand Prix itself, aren't we, Jamie?
Yeah. Yes. And should we get straight into the race? And I actually missed the start because I was power walking across Manchester to get to a pub. So I only got in after turn one, which
is
a bit disappointing.
That doesn't scream Alcoholics Anonymous story.
Yes. So nothing really happened at the start other than Hamilton got ahead of Sainz and Norris got ahead of Russell at the very start, very briefly, to be fair. The first major bit of action was Sainz then trying to dive back up the inside of Hamilton.
His Max Verstappen tribute, yeah.
Yeah, which was less dirty than what Verstappen did last year.
Oh, completely.
Sainz actually left a bit of space on the outside, which was quite nice.
Not a lot.
It was enough that Hamilton didn't have to go off if he didn't want to.
He got pushed out onto that curb. He couldn't. He would have had to bail out anyway.
Yeah, it would have been dangerous to keep it in, like Hülkenberg Grosjean style, 2018.
Exactly.
But he did jump across the curbs, got a bit of floor damage, and had to give the place back later on anyway because Sainz was ahead. Hamilton jumped the chicane and didn't give it back, which was slightly different from the situation last year.
Yes.
Despite what people on Twitter are saying.
Exactly. And I mean, it's kind of difficult, isn't it, again, because I think desperately now, the problem we've got, of course, is that, like, the move that Verstappen pulled off in Brazil was his fault. Sainz pulled off a fairly similar move in Abu Dhabi, but it was Hamilton's fault. Surely, the FIA have just made this so much more complicated than it needs to be, where we just need a rule now that you can't push, you have to leave a car's width. Like, this whole idea of barging cars off the circuit needs to be scrapped entirely, and you have to give a car's width, otherwise you can't claim the place.
I think it is hard, because, like, forcing other drivers off the track and stuff like that, it basically depends on the outcome, which it just shouldn't do.
No.
Because, say there's a wall on the outside of Turn 6 at Abu Dhabi, then Sainz would absolutely be getting a penalty for that.
Yeah.
For pushing Hamilton into a wall. But because there's a runoff area, Hamilton can go off the track and then gives the place back. So it's a bit weird. But
and this is the thing, is because I do like, you know, the thing, believe we need
the thing
a reshuffle.
Did. The thing Stroll did in Brazil to Vettel. If that runoff area on the left there was tarmac...
It's not really a runoff area, is it?
No, it's grass, obviously, in Brazil. But if that was tarmac, I don't think Stroll would have got a penalty because
well,
he technically
it been
left.
It would have been
left
Nico
two
Rosberg,
wheels with, though,
wouldn't
didn't
it,
he?
With Alonso.
Yeah.
But
it's just very daft.
And this is why I think, you know, we just need a reshuffle, of course. We finally got the white lines as track limits everywhere.
Yeah.
Has made things so well. In many ways, it's made so many things so much easier this year. But again, I think we're going to need to see more circuit updates that it's all automated with lasers and or cameras and things like that.
Lasers.
You know what I mean? That sort of thing, though.
Yeah. Co-master style.
Exactly. But it's we're slowly seeing more and more things shift in the right direction, but I still believe on-track battling needs to be changed still.
Just everyone needs to watch 2006 Raikkonen Schumacher at Brazil and be like, this is how you race.
Because, and I mean, there's so many battles, isn't there, for like, even when we were getting into Formula 1, where there was more racing respect. Like, it's always, again, when I think back to obviously Hamilton at France, isn't it, 2008, where he got like a 10-second stop-go penalty for running wide through a chicane.
A
drive-through penalty for running wide at a chicane after he'd overtaken someone. And it's things like that,
that
of course.
Vettel, actually.
It was on Vettel, but it's things like that, of course. You know, that penalty was ridiculously extreme. But, you know, the fact that drivers can force each other off the circuit still, you know, the fact that it's about who gets to an apex first, I do think we just need a rule the next year that says if you force another car off the circuit, you have to give the place up. And I mean, we might then start to see cars just deliberately bail out on occasion and run wide. But if
and then try and claim they were pushed off. Yeah.
If you've left a car's width, that should be the rule.
Yeah. Problem is, that kind of legislation change takes years.
But the problem is, we're just going more and more down a rabbit hole now of no one really knows
so
what the rules
cloudy.
Are anymore.
Yeah.
And if someone goes for a dive bomb and they're only halfway alongside, they've basically then just got to force themselves later on the brakes to get in front by the apex to then force another car right because they haven't slowed down enough. And then
and stay on the track themselves.
Claim the
basically
point.
What Verstappen did at Turn 6 last year.
Exactly.
Which was rightly not told to... I don't think Hamilton should have given the place up.
No, exactly. It was a desperate dive bomb, wasn't it, at the start of the Grand Prix?
But because he was technically trying to exploit the loophole that the FIA had created by
Verstappen.
He's worked his way into the FIA's rulebook over the last 6 years.
They're desperately. Oh, this is why I think we just need like a complete restructure of on-track battling. Because again, you know, we look at Hamilton, Alonso at Imola at Hungary last year and things like that. That's what happens when you've got two drivers that were brought up with you have to give a car's width. You do get good battles that last longer.
Yeah.
And definitely. We're just seeing less and less of them each year at the moment. We see more overtakes, but less battling.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, the early laps of the Grand Prix were a bit of a slow burn, weren't they? I think by lap 10, there was only two cars within DRS of the car in front of them. which was a bit of a shame. I mean, we had Lewis and Sainz just sort of jumping each other around in a couple of little battles, but it was quite clear that Red Bull had the most pace, then Ferrari, then Mercedes, like we'd seen pretty much all year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Until we finally got to the first round of pit stops.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you had Hamilton drop back behind Russell as well, thinking he had issues, which maybe he did, because obviously later on he did.
Yeah.
Russell in the pits got a slow stop anyway. He was quite close to Hamilton, so that probably would have put him behind Hamilton anyway with the slow stop. But then, to add insult to injury, they released him straight into Norris, which was very kind. And that landed him an obvious 5-second penalty, which basically killed any chance of either Mercedes beating Sainz.
Yeah.
Because Hamilton was already quite a long way back, and Russell then had the penalty to contend with and a slow stop. An absolute slam dunk penalty. I don't think anyone had any complaints, but
I loved Russell's radio.
What was it? I just can't remember.
Yeah, I spotted him.
Oh, great.
Like, how does that help your case?
So unfortunately, that took away any jeopardy of the top six being shuffled at all. Until later on, the strategies kind of came into play a bit, but that was kind of that for the top six. Verstappen just sort of checked out, as we've seen so many times this season. Not really a lot. There was a few little overtakes of people on one stop. I think Bottas and Magnussen were going long on hards. Vettel was going super long on mediums, and the team was screwing him. Which was quite funny to see Stroll overtake him later in the race.
Oh, yeah. Not great. Not great for Seb. Did he get a penalty as well quickly for speeding in the pit lane?
No, he didn't. I don't think he did speed.
He did.
The tyre smoke was for revving the rear wheels as he left, wasn't it?
No. The tyre smoke was when he locked up the brakes because he'd accidentally taken the pit limiter off too early.
Oh,
he definitely sped. He slowed back down again. So I wonder if it was the average speed through the pit lane was low enough.
Yeah, the average speed through the pits is what it is. So if you speed, you can just slow down and you're fine.
I'm going to start hammering it into pit lanes on F1, getting the jump on cars in front of you, and then just slamming on the brakes. Stop there for 2 seconds or something.
That's a great idea.
Let's do it. Let's get a Formula One drive and let's do it. Moving on from theatrics from us, jumping back into the Grand Prix itself, of course. Fernando Alonso, a cheeky double overtake on both Bottas and Yuki Tsunoda after what was looking like another disappointed weekend, of course. Then
Tsunoda did get him straight back.
Sonoda did get him straight back, and then Alonso's car gave up anyway in true Alpine fashion. Just one
most anticlimactic. He just literally just cut to him coming through the pit lane to retire. It's like, oh, no one's even surprised, really.
What's that? Mechanical failure number 6 this season?
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
Probably up to 100 points lost, according to
him. He would have been definitely in this championship battle had it not been for that. But does mean Esteban Ocon, though, over their tenure together, he becomes the first teammate of Alonso's to completely outscore him over their time.
Which is a very arbitrary stat.
It is a very arbitrary stat.
Because, obviously, he's already lost to teammates in one-off seasons.
Yep.
Such as Tasso Marquez.
And
he tied with Lewis Hamilton.
He lost to Lewis Hamilton.
And he lost to Jenson Button.
He did also lose. Which season did he lose to Button?
2015.
Did he? I thought he still outscored him.
Maybe 16.
I thought he still outscored him. You keep talking quickly. I'm double checking this.
Okay. Well, yeah, nothing really then happened until we got some 2021 Abu Dhabi flashbacks with Mick Schumacher and Nicholas Latifi beefing for last and crashing into each other, which is kind of the best way for both of them to go out, really.
Sums them up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does very much sum them up. I'm surprised that there wasn't a safety car.
They both got going.
But it looked like for a moment we might actually get some spice in the race. But they decided that this year didn't need a safety car at the end of the race, which...
Yes.
Just saying that to wind up Matt, really. Last year was obviously going to be a safety car.
I didn't hear you, sorry.
I'm also surprised. I swear when it happened, Latifi's rear wing was completely, like, off.
It looked like that. Now, I thought this is the same thing. It looked like that, but it was because of whatever he put on the tyre... It just made the back end of the car look weird because of obviously the way it was spinning quickly. Because I thought that tyre was punctured, and it because of how quickly he was going, it was going to flare up and rip the rear wing off with it. But no, it was just because of what he put on the tyre. And just to confirm, you were correct. Jenson Button did outscore Alonso in 2015, courtesy of a sixth place at COTA.
Yeah, what a goat. Well, Alonso got fifth in Hungary, didn't he?
Yes.
So Button must have been good across the course of the season.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting for maybe half a lap with Schumacher and Latifi just crashing into each other. It was such a clumsy move from Mick. And he
it
got
was an F1 manager crash. That's what I loved about it.
Yeah, it was weird how Mick spun as well. Like, the car behind in that situation, it's weird for them to just lose all grip like that. But there we go.
It is what it is. But, I mean, then we kind of got... Well, at the time, it looked like we could have had a little bit of spice towards the end of the Grand Prix, wasn't it? Sergio Perez told to box again, and you think, right, this is Verstappen's chance to prove he's a team player and back Charles Leclerc up. And what do we get? We get a Verstappen radio going, tell him to go full send, and I don't give a kit.
Verstappen was never going to back Leclerc up.
No, of course.
He wasn't sure that Verstappen was... Verstappen wasn't sure he could get the tyre to the end at first. There's no point just giving Leclerc DRS.
Yeah, but he should have at least... The thing is, for Red Bull, at the end of the day, like, it would have been good PR, because, let's be fair, the PR statement they gave out this week about last weekend was dog, because we've already heard on the team radio three times they asked, or twice even, that Verstappen had been asked to let Sergio by, and then they went, he only heard it once out of the final corner. You're like, well, that's not what happened.
Yeah, that's not true.
if Leclerc wins or Leclerc comes P2, as long as he's ahead of Perez, it's decided anyway. So they may as well have just backed Verstappen into him.
But then there's no point, like, risking a race win to try and get Checo second when they don't really care.
But again, like I said, it would have just made better PR for them, I think, at the end of the day. Yeah. Which would have been quite important. But we kind of were hyping up that maybe Checo could get back to Leclerc by the end, but it became quite quickly apparent that it wasn't going to happen. And I mean, late on in the day, of course, like we mentioned, obviously Stroll had a much, much better strategy down at Aston Martin, so he jumped Seb towards the end in his final Grand Prix. And of course, to top off what has been a sensational year for Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton, their first mechanical failure, 3 laps from home in Abu Dhabi. How often have we seen Lewis either have brilliant or god-awful Abu Dhabi Grand Prix? He doesn't get any in between, does he? It's a nightmare.
Not at all. He's clearly just doing his fans the service they require and boycotting lap 58.
You're such a dick.
Yeah,
I saw your tweet on that yesterday. I'm guessing it absolutely popped off, didn't it?
No, it got 0 likes.
That doesn't surprise me.
It was unfair. I think that deserves more likes, to be honest.
What, follow more me on Twitter. Zero?
Yeah. I'm very good at getting 0 likes on tweets. So
you are. You're banging it so far.
It's worrying. So Lewis, who was ahead of... Well, he was fourth at the time of DNF. He probably would have lost to Sainz anyway, but he maybe would have got fifth. Hydraulic issue and... Yeah, the perfect way for the W13 to go out in a blaze of nothing.
What an absolutely god-awful...
His first winless season. Not my goat.
His first ever winless season. His first ever season without a pole position.
Schumacher's the goat.
Well, this is the thing now, of course, because...
Michael Schumacher, sorry.
Definitely
not Ralph.
Max Verstappen is the only now current Formula 1 driver with more than 2 seasons in a row with race victories as of right now.
Yeah, because all the other drivers this year... No, Perez.
Perez. Perez has got 3, hasn't he? Sorry, yeah. More than 3. So obviously Verstappen's on 7. Perez is on 3. Leclerc's on 1.
1.
Sainz is on 1. 1. George Russell's on 1. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Wow. That is it, isn't it?
That's it. There's only 5 winners this year. Yeah.
Only 5 winners.
That's still quite a lot.
That is actually...
Remember
still
the days
like
of 3 with Mercedes
3
and
through
plus
13
Vettel.
To 16. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, well, I think a lot of people are saying, you know, this is like the end of Lewis Hamilton. He served such a different role in that Mercedes team this year to when he's
and
ever
he's still
had
been
to
very
do.
Good.
And he has, yeah. I mean, what, from Baku onwards, I'm pretty certain he's still outscored everyone bar Max, if I'm not mistaken.
He probably, yeah, he would have been close with Perez and Leclerc, but I reckon he was second if you count a championship from Baku. He was probably second. I don't know that for a fact.
No, but he would have been right there in the fight for it.
Yeah.
Like, really, when you look through the season, from Baku onwards, 4th, 3 third places, 2 second places, of course, the incident with Alonso at Belgium, 4th and 5th at Netherlands and Italy, when that could have easily been... Well, it could have been in the contention for a win at the Netherlands. Singapore was, of course, a disaster. 5th at Japan, just because Mercedes weren't that great. And then 3 second places before this retirement in Abu Dhabi. Hamilton has not lost anything still, has he really?
I think he hasn't lost anything this year. I genuinely, I'm not trying to bait you here, the aggressiveness, he's not quite there with the other drivers now, which is maybe a good thing for his credibility.
This comes from being part of the generation, though, that was brought in with a bit more race and respect, though, isn't it?
But it does cost him sometimes in wheel-to-wheel battles.
Occasionally.
But that wasn't the thing this year. But it's just kind of rid its ugly head this year because he's more in battles.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a complicated issue, isn't it? But I don't think either of us are going to say, you know, this is the end of Lewis Hamilton's Formula 1 career.
I could fully see a Mercedes versus Red Bull next year for the championship.
And I think, and this is what this is a question that I wanted to ask you as a bit of a hypothetical, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Do you believe if George Russell had been promoted into that Mercedes seat last year, of course, as Hamilton's number two, being a lot more aggressive than Bottas, being quicker than Bottas generally as well, do we think that could have changed the championship outcome?
Yes. I think it would have done.
You think had Mercedes promoted Russell, Hamilton would have been the amount of times, world champion?
Like, the only race that I can remember Bottas doing anything helpful...
Turkey.
...was Turkey.
Yes.
And that cost Verstappen 7 points. I think Russell would have cost Verstappen a lot more than 7 points over the course of the season. And in Abu Dhabi, Bottas was behind both AlphaTauris when Perez was giving Verstappen a championship.
Yes.
Like, even if Russell was there in the top four, stopping Perez doing anything stupid, that would have maybe made a difference.
So. And I think the only real thing that Mercedes, of course, have got to be careful of next year, if they are back in this championship fight, is just when do they play a number one role?
Yeah, because they very much have let their drivers race this year. Which I think is good when you're not in a championship fight. But then when you are in a championship fight, that's unless both drivers difficult. Are right there, it seems to make sense to back one.
Yeah.
But then I don't know who they would back at the minute because they're so equally matched.
I think it would still likely be Lewis. I think this is the thing, isn't it? Of course, when the chips are down, Hamilton is still always that driver that will come out absolutely flying when he needs to. Like, when pretty much every other driver would accept that all hope is lost, Hamilton is probably one of two, maybe three on the grid that will still come out absolutely swinging. At the end of the day. But of course, let's be fair, Abu Dhabi, it was a bit of a snooze fest, wasn't it, for the most part? You had a few interesting moments.
There was stuff
moments.
Going on, but it wasn't for anything relevant. It was like battling.
It kind of summed up the year, didn't it, really, for the most part? It kind of just summed up the entire season. I mean,
you had what? Verstappen just clear at the front.
Verstappen Perez clear at the front. I mean, it kind of said it all, didn't it, when first, second and third in the championship finished first, second and third. Sainz and Russell were the wrong way around. Of course, Hamilton had the retirement. So 7th and 8th in the championship finished 6th and 7th. There wasn't a lot that was wildly unpredictable from Abu Dhabi. But of course, Max Verstappen did win the Grand Prix ahead of Leclerc and Sergio Perez there. Other storylines going on. Of course, Aston Martin and Alfa Romeo tied at the end of the year for 6th place overall. Of course, Alfa Romeo even will take that on count back even by virtue of Valtteri Bottas' 5th place at Imola earlier on in the year. So very, very important for them, of course.
Congratulations to myself, predicting Alfa Romeo 6.
Well done to you, and of course my team as well. Pick up that extra prize money. Sebastian Vettel with 2 6th places at both Azerbaijan and Japan was not good enough to overhaul. And Stroll also had a 6th place at Singapore. But 1 5th place trumps those 6ths.
Yeah. Yes, it does. And big for Alfa Romeo, because I think as a team they haven't finished that high since 2015, where they came 7th or 8th, I think.
Well, that's still not as high as 6th.
No, it's still not as high, yeah. So I haven't been as high as 6th since 2013? 12, even?
It probably, goes back to that. And it wouldn't even surprise me there if they finished 7th still.
No, I think they did come 6th in 2012. But yeah, that's a long time since they did well.
Exactly.
So, fair play.
It's nice to see Alfa Romeo fighting back.
Yeah, it is. I was just going to gloss over what I said. Fair play.
I didn't hear what you said, to be honest, again.
I said you might get a raise.
I might get a raise, yeah, with a bit of luck. Keep your fingers crossed.
A bonus time coming soon.
Yeah, we'll wait and see about that one. But, it's difficult, isn't it, really? Because we kind of leave Abu Dhabi knowing, well, not really with any sort of extra hype or expectation going into 2023, do we? There were no sort of major storylines that kind of made you wondering what will happen next year that we kind of weren't already. I mean, what really else is there to talk about, Jamie, from this weekend?
Yeah, not a lot.
Ferrari did enough.
I'm hyped for the F1 Secret Santa video that comes out in December.
Yeah.
So that'd be fun.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's just a bit weird, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I've got to claim my sweepstake from winning F1 Fantasy, which is fun.
Yep, in your own personal league.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also going to be a rogue tweet on my Twitter account at some point.
At some point, yeah. Need to get some inspiration for that and not get Matt cancelled, because that wouldn't be ideal.
Exactly. Another little fun fact for you, though, Jamie. Aston Martin were the only team to finish the same position this year as they did last year.
Wow. Yeah.
Every other team either went backwards or forwards. We will be definitely doing a predictions recap show at some point in the near future. I did pick up on a couple of other interesting stats, if I remember correctly. Sebastian Vettel, of course, took driver of the day with the most percentage we've ever seen, as well. Apparently, 56.6%.
What about when Rio Haryanto got it and they had to give it to someone else?
Yeah, they did give it to someone else that weekend, didn't they? I mean, really, yeah. All we can really talk about is kind of F1 Fantasy and all that good stuff, isn't it? It's kind of been. This is, I think, the thing, isn't it? Because we've kind of left Abu Dhabi and everyone thinks it was a really bad season. Let's not forget, midfield scrap has been sensational this year. Like, the fact that pretty much every midfield team has at some point
down.
Or another. It died down a bit, but there were still storylines. I think it was the stat, wasn't it, from shows how close it's been, that Seb was P6 in qualifying in Abu Dhabi, 0.3 away from the relegation, then being knocked out in Q1.
Yeah, yeah. It was insanely close. I think it was a bit of a shame that Alpine and McLaren had a bit of the edge on everyone else, and they were quite consistent, so really there were only really chances if one of the big five retired, so the smaller teams were battling for maybe 9th or 10th most of the time, but there were points where each team had maybe the fourth fastest car,
with the exception of Williams and AlphaTauri.
Yeah, not Williams.
Well, AlphaTauri and Baku were pretty good, but then
Tsunoda's wing fell apart.
Yeah. It's just been a weird up and down season for the midfield.
It has. It reminds me a lot of 2011, where the storyline of the season wasn't great, but individual races were good, and a lot of them were enjoyable, but a lot of them were also quite dead.
Exactly. I mean,
I think we were treated so well in 2021.
This was always the thing, wasn't it? And again, the same thing happened in 2011, wasn't it? 2010, was such a hyped up year. Four drivers going into that final race with a chance of the championship. But I mean, yeah, really, I mean, what more can you say? Red Bull, hats off, they've done the job this year, you know. Obviously, after it was kind of good for them, of course, after obviously what happened at the end of last year, you know, the fact they've just had a dominant season for Max.
Yeah.
You know, just any sort of talk about, you know, illegitimate world championship and all this, that and the other, you know, he's got one where he's absolutely dominated now, which we kind of expected, you know, at some point or another, Max would do. Ferrari, similar story to the past, but fair play, they actually made a good strategy call this weekend. To wrap
it
up
is.
P2 in both championships.
And it's big progress from the last 2 years.
It is. You know, the fact that we think Ferrari were close to backmarkers again in 2020 for a few Grand Prix after all the engine controversy, which is why people talk about the illegal Ferrari engine rather than Mercedes or Red Bull doing any trickery, because when they get something banned or outlawed from their car, they don't fall down to the midfield instantly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that was very funny.
I mean,
2020 was a bizarre year.
It was just so weird, wasn't it? We've got the rise of George Russell. We've got Carlos Sainz there kind of getting proven to be definitely Ferrari's number two. He's had a bit of a rough year, hasn't he, throughout a lot of Grand Prix. You know, I think we've still got the talk of the Hamilton comeback. Lando Norris, absolutely king of the midfield. Like, you cannot argue. Yeah. He is
only driver to get a podium outside the top three teams.
And I was there. Let's not forget.
Yep. Yeah,
I think we've got a lot of storylines going into next year, though, don't we? I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll do a lot of narrative building over the winter.
We will. There is quite a lot of different stories and timelines to talk about, isn't there, in the winter.
Hulk's back.
Hulk and back as well, yep, of course. We'll discuss that more when we do our 2023 predictions in the future. Right, let's just do it then. Oh, predictions.
The final nail in the
recap.
Coffin.
Let's just get it settled.
I had already won maybe three races ago now.
Two races ago.
Yeah, I went very safe. Very boring, you might argue. But
very, very,
very successful. Because my predictions were Verstappen on pole.
2 points.
Verstappen win.
2 points.
Leclerc second.
2 points. Six points
Hamilton
out of eight for Jamie.
Yeah. 6 out of 8.
Not bad.
Which I think... genuinely, if I'd have put bets on, like, I'd have done pretty well this year, but unfortunately I'm not a betting man. So yeah, well, I can't remember what yours were, but they were probably trash.
They were not good. I gave Hamilton one final kiss of death this year. I said Verstappen pole, yeah, fair enough. I was expecting I'll be honest, I was expecting a shithouse victory from Hamilton. You know, redemption for last year. Of course, I say that, so he gets absolutely shafted. Yep. So I went Hamilton win, Perez P2, so 1 point there, Verstappen P3. So I scored 4 this weekend, which rather alarmingly actually isn't that bad for me this year.
No, 4 out of 8 is pretty good going for you.
Like, did we start these? We did start these at the start of the year.
Yeah.
The fact that theoretically then there's probably been, what, close to 170 points available, and you've scored...
Well, 8 lots. What's 8 lots of 22?
Plus six. So we're looking at 182 points.
182 points.
And you scored about 70 and I scored 50. It's really kind of poor when you think about it.
I think getting half of the thing bang half. On. 70 out of 180 is almost half.
It's not.
Nice. I don't know if we updated the points either recently.
Because remember, we scored one between us last
weekend. Oh, yeah, true. I'll take 72 out of 182. That's not bad.
Fair enough.
It's probably a pass at uni. Is that 40%?
Nearly. It's got to be close, hasn't it? We'll accept it.
72 out of 182. Oh, it's 39 and a half.
Ah, that sounds just like your first year at uni.
Yeah, it actually is.
what a disaster for me this year. Let's not talk about it. And to be honest, I don't really want to talk about F1 fantasy either.
I did all right.
I didn't.
Yeah, shall we? I scored very fittingly 183 points to round off.
Oh, I did beat you.
Yeah. I did pretty bad because I turboed Bottas for some reason.
Jamie, I didn't beat you.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh.
I rather fittingly got 212 points. No, I didn't. I got 123.
Oh, dear.
I had Sainz turboed for 46, Verstappen for 44. I forgot to Mega Driver. Jamie knew full well I'd forget and text me 10 minutes into qualifying going, did you remember your Mega? And I was like, no, I didn't. So I'm going to claim I scored an extra 88 points this weekend. And that would have put me on 211. So I would have almost scored 212.
Yeah.
Would have been quite poetic. Alonso bagged me -8, so he completely cancelled out Bottas. And then I had Perez and Alpine. So just a dog weekend.
Yeah. I had Verstappen for 44. I had Russell with double streaks for 39. I then, because I spent more money on Verstappen and Russell, I had Ricciardo, Tsunoda and Bottas as my other three. And Ricciardo and Tsunoda actually did all right. But unfortunately, I turboed Bottas for 16.
Ah.
And then Ferrari for 65. So yeah, I did all right.
That's not bad going. So how many points, Jamie, have you scored at the end of the year?
The course of the season. How do you actually find it?
It should be at the top of your team.
3,984.
So even if I bagged my 88 bonus points from Verstappen, I would have still been about 180 behind you.
Wow.
Which, to be fair, is a lot closer than I was in our other league.
But for
one final time then, Jamie, are you going to run through weekly scores or are you going to run the weekly scores are broken on mine. You're going to have to go through weekly.
Oh, they're good on mine.
Okay, you do it.
Yeah, so we had in P1 Laura J on 305 points, having Mega Driver Leclerc, interestingly. Leclerc, Mega, Sainz, Turbo, Red Bull was the team. Norris, Ocon and Magnussen for 0 got you 305 points. Fair play. We've got pole sitters with Matt N in second place, 303, which I guess is very similar. Yeah, it is exactly the same, apart from Perez instead of Norris. I don't know how you manage that. Fair play. The money laundering there is real. We have Levin K in third with a team called Differentials. I wonder who... Oh, it's not that different. It's exactly the same, actually. Then we have Leonardo A in fourth with Adam P, Daniel D, Ben H... BH, sorry, with 291 points in seventh, with Tonya I, Owen K, and, oh dear, an Icelandic, Svanhut Uskbjorns in eighth, joint eighth, rounding out the top 10, on 290 points to get into the top 10.
Hats off, so I would have needed an absolute miracle to even get close at the end of the season. But, yeah. Jamie, when we look at the overall league, who had a higher finishing position in one Grand Prix?
Right, so you're making up stats to claim that you beat me. Yeah, my best all season, I think, was Canada, where I got 81.
Ah,
81st.
Ah, Austria, mate. 32nd.
If I'd have megged Verstappen in Canada.
I megged Verstappen. Oh, I turboed Leclerc, didn't I? Yeah, that was how I clutched up that one. 387 points at Austria. But it was obviously.
If I'd have megged Verstappen in Canada, that would have got me 88 more. I would have been top 10. I would have been second.
You would have been. You nailed that week, didn't you?
Yeah.
Let's run through then our final results from the entirety of the league. Big hats off, Philip S. What? He's done it. The Volvo 240, hashtags number 17, global 2021 world TCR car. 4,518 points. I don't know where that would place him in the World League, Jamie. I don't know if you can check that up for me quickly.
Find out very fast.
Cancun Racing, of course, always there inside the top 10 threat pretty much all of the season in P2. 4,483. Bryce G, the boy who's cried wolf, rounds out our podium there with Bartek M from Poland just missing out. 1 point ahead of Nihal V there with Mission Smoke win now. Parc Fermé with Aditha M, 4,408 points in sixth. Kevin L. With a rather interesting team, Bottas and Hose in P7. That's an interesting team name. Larry T finishes out the year just ahead of his fellow Canadian Anurag B. And then Tom R finishes just inside the top 10 there.
How many points did you need for the top 10 overall?
4,379 would have netted you a top 10 in our league this year. You're a long way off in the end. I mean, there's got to be a shout out as well. Mansell's mustache, Max T. Oh, yeah. What a fall.
Where did he finish?
13th. What a fall from grace. Oh, I'm so sorry, mate.
That mega Hamilton was tragic.
That mega Hamilton did really just... I mean, he probably quit after that because he was still top of the world, wasn't he, at that point?
Yeah, before that mega driver Hamilton in Belgium for a DNF.
It was... it all went
I don't think... I can't see the Volvo anywhere near in the overall.
How much was the top, in the world?
Overall first was 4,766.
Right, that is our goal next year. We're gonna
win overall.
We're not gonna win, Jamie. We're gonna get screwed unless we put a lot of research in each week. Do we want paddock pass tickets that badly?
I mean, you'll get them anyway.
Hopefully, so. We'll wait and see. but I mean, yeah, hats off to Philip S this year. We've kind of got a couple of little goals in mind for Knowing Wheel next year. We want to try and get it close to 10,000 teams, which would be quite cool. And then, if we can try and get top of the world, that would be quite exciting as well. And like I said, I'm going to try and sort out some prizes for next year. It's a bit weird trying to do prizes for F1 Fantasy.
I'm having trouble hearing.
Sorry.
Shut up, Alexa.
Alexa, stop. Don't care. It's
We've
kind
got
of
our first guest on the podcast.
It's kind of a bit difficult to try and get prizes in because, of course, if I do a prize for F1 Fantasy, I'll have to announce at the start of the 2023 season that the prize will quite possibly be like F1 2024, the game, or something like that. but we'll try and work out a couple of different
prizes.
We'll try
and get in touch. DM Matt and he'll sort you something out.
Yeah, Philip, if you're watching this, hit me up, mate, and I'll see what I can hook you up with. Even if it's like a copy of F1 2023 or something like that.
You can get him a Matt 212 hat.
I can try and make a Matt 212 hat, can I? We'll see what we can do. But there we go. Philip S. Round of applause, Jamie. Let's give him a clap. I want to hear you clap him. Good man.
You're going to have trouble syncing this now.
I really am. Yeah, all these claps. 50 minutes into the show. I mean, what else have we got, Jamie?
That's it, isn't it?
Well, we've got the quiz,
F1's over. Oh, yeah. Quiz, go for it.
Right. Final quiz. Well, I mean, we're still going to do quizzes in the off season, aren't we?
Yeah.
They're just going to be absolute egg.
They're going to be rubbish. And it's like, who won in 1962?
That was
Jack Brabham.
It was Jack Brabham, wasn't it? If I remember correctly. I think so. Or was it? No, was it Phil Hill?
Oh, I've put 19-2 because my six key doesn't work. Graham Hill. No. Yes.
Was Graham? Yeah. Sorry, I knew it was one of the Hills. Right, Jamie, if I'm not mistaken, there are 17 answers to this week's quiz, but you should be able to get all of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
17
eight.
In a minute is quite hard.
So, you've got 1 minute, Jamie. Max Verstappen officially became a two-time Formula One World Champion this year.
Yes, he did.
So we'll take him off the list immediately. Can you name me every other Formula One driver with two or more world titles? Your time starts now.
Schumacher, Hamilton.
Yes.
Vettel,
yes.
Prost,
yes.
Senna,
yes.
Stewart,
I can't keep
Verstappen
up with all these. Yep.
Fangio,
yeah.
Ascari,
yep.
Oh dear. Brabham,
Yep.
Häkkinen.
Yep.
I've done this in such a bad order.
You really have. You've screwed yourself.
Fittipaldi.
Yes.
The other Brazilian, Piquet.
Yes. 30 seconds left on the clock.
There's an Australian. Is there?
No.
Oh, no, this is shocking. What haven't I gone? Oh, Jim Clark.
Yeah.
Other British ones. How many more?
Three more.
Alonso. Did I say
yes, Alonso?
Alonso.
I thought you'd forget about him. You got two
three,
more.
So two more.
You got
okay,
3 seconds.
50s.
Three,
Fariner?
Two, what? No, Fariner only won one.
30,
time's
no,
up.
30's no, 30's no. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, you're gonna kick yourself.
Oh, no.
You did screw yourself then. I thought you were just going to go from most world championships down.
Well, I should have done that.
Should have done that, Jamie. So, one of
oh,
them...
Oh, Lauda. No!
You forgot Niki Lauda and literally Graham Hill that we spoke about 10 seconds ago.
Graham Hill won two, did he?
Yeah. He won
actually,
three.
Actually...
No, it was two. 62 and 68, if I'm not mistaken.
Fair. Yeah, that was terrible.
So you got 15
also, little shout out. They showed Niki Lauda's son.
Yeah.
He's about 10 years
old. He's 13. Niki Lauda had that child when he was 60. What a baller.
Wow. That's Bernie Eccleston vibes right there.
Yeah, Bernie Eccleston was in his late 80s, though, which this is taking a dark path to finish off this year's show.
Yeah, if you're watching at this point, then please stop. That was a pretty abysmal. That wasn't abysmal. I did it right. If I forgot Alonso, then I'd be having words
good.
To myself.
Yeah. Yeah, you almost forgot Alonso.
Yeah.
Race rating, though, Jamie.
Yeah, it was all right. I'd give it a 5 out of 10.
I was going to say a 5 as well. It was
not the worst.
So we've confirmed then that I did go to the best race of 2022.
Which one? Silverstone?
Yes. It certainly wasn't Imola.
Silverstone was very good. Yeah, it definitely wasn't Imola. Silverstone was pretty good. Yeah.
Driver of the day?
Oof. I mean, it's boring. No, you know what? I'll give it Lando. Lando Norris.
Lando Norris, fair enough. You know what? I'm going to say, for nostalgia's sake, Sebastian Vettel.
No, you're wet.
Yep, I am. I'm absolutely taking it this weekend. But I guess, yeah, that's 2022 wrapped up, Jamie. This is kind of a bit weird, isn't it?
It is.
What an anticlimactic Grand Prix to finish
without
off.
Without
F1. 4 months without F1 on. I mean, we've got the World Cup. We've got Formula
E. It's coming
e.
home in 2 hours.
It's going to be all over, yep, in 2 hours when we lose
England
to Iran.
England 2, Iran 0. Announce it now.
Okay. You did do these for the Euros as well, didn't you? And you did do quite
did.
Well on a lot of them.
Yeah.
So are we going to start doing World Cup predictions, aren't
World
we?
World Cup predictions, yeah.
Right.
Daily football podcast coming your
oh,
way.
Oh, no chance in the world.
Can you name any Iranian player?
I cannot. Can you?
That's a problem. Yeah, I can name their front three.
Okay.
I'm not going to.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's a wrap. I mean, it's kind of been our first super serious season, hasn't it, of covering
F1. I wouldn't go that far.
Well,
I don't know about how serious
far
this
more
has
serious
been,
than 2021.
Yeah, definitely. We actually got a name.
We did come up with a name this year. And I mean, yeah. I just want to say, you know, let's get gushy for a couple of minutes, Jamie. I've really, really enjoyed going through it this year. Of course, it's not been the most insane F1 season of all time, but it has been really, really good fun, hasn't it?
You know,
there's been,
I think
a lot of people are massively underplaying it when there were quite a lot of storylines. Yes, most of them we're not going to remember, probably even next year, because Formula One changes like that all the time. But you know what? It's been a fun season to recap with one of my mates as we chat absolute random stuff. The amount of rabbit holes we've gone down this year has been incredible. To so many weird and wonderful places as well. And of course, all of you for listening, you know, we've got...
Yeah, thank you so much for watching.
Exactly, you know, watching, listening, you know, whether you've followed us on Spotify, whether you've just stuck around on YouTube all season.
This would be a waste of time talking to Matt if we didn't get views.
Thanks for that, mate. Thanks for that. But, I mean, like we said, you know, we're kind of labeling this as the end of 2022, of course. We're going to be back with weekly shows still throughout the winter break. So, you know, we've got plenty more bits and pieces to discuss. I mean, let's just be honest here, Jamie Quigley. We've got so many things we want to do with this show, haven't we?
Yeah.
Down the line. So many different sort of weird and wonderful little plans that we've got. Maybe a few of them will sort of cement themselves over the winter break as well. We'll wait and see about that. But, you know, it still genuinely feels to me like this is the beginning of Knowing Wheel rather than anything else. Yeah. I think we've got a lot of different things that we want to take on with this. But I guess then, for the final time of 2022, GG's to Jamie. You have absolutely rinsed me in most of the competitions
in
we've
everything.
Done.
Yeah.
However, I did predict Charles Leclerc would... No, I didn't, did I? You said Perez. No, you said Perez would beat Leclerc, didn't you? And I said Leclerc would hang on.
No, I said Leclerc would.
Damn it.
I think we both did.
Damn it. I think... No, we definitely went the opposite there. I did say Ocon would beat Alonso, though, which I don't think you did.
I don't think I did. No, maybe... I think I did. We'll have to... I don't know. Let's go watch it back.
Who knows? What an awful way to outro the show, but...
Yeah.
Episode 87. We'll be back next week. I think it's for the Robert Kubica tribute show, isn't it?
It is. And Rio Haryanto.
And then after that, I think, is Oscar Piastri. Oh, no, we've already done the Oscar Piastri one, I think.
It'll be Adrian Sutil next.
Adrian Sutil, number 99. What a baller.
And Giovinazzi.
And Giovinazzi as well, of course. But thank you all so much for listening. Jamie, were you going to say something?
I was going to say we forgot about Pascal Wehrlein, 94.
We did forget about Pascal Wehrlein as well. We've got plenty of time over the winter break. Thank you all so much for listening once again. And yeah, we'll be back next week, though. We'll be doing our grand recap of our 2022 predictions. That is going to be quite a laugh, I think, because there were definitely some moments where we did not know Wheel. But yeah, I mean, just thank you all so much for the support over the course of the year. And yeah, Knowing Wheel is certainly not going anywhere anytime soon, whether for better or for worse.